You're listening to Lost and Rewound on Radio Free Brooklyn. Time to get embarrassed with us.
Happy New Year.
Yes, 2017. I'm alive.
Continuously alive.
Yes, I didn't know if I'd ever make it out of 2016, but I did.
I'm not Jimmy.
I am not Alan.
Every week here, we bring you a show about all the old audio from yesteryears. It began with my stuff, and thank God that there's other people out there who did more than I and have their own artifacts. Hey, that's what it's all about. It's about unearthing the artifacts of the audio and visual variety.
Yes, finding all the recordings of old, the recordings of y'all.
We do have a lot of interesting stuff to uncover this week, but before we begin, we do want to remind you that this is a new year. So, do you have any resolutions? If you do have resolutions that are involved in the art of giving, do not hesitate, because we have a pledge page for Radio Free Brooklyn.
Yes, this is true. We don't make any money off of this. This is purely passion.
Passion project.
Purely passion. So if you do want to help that passion and you want to fund the arts, I mean, what's better than that? I mean, you could fund other things, but those are necessities.
Necessities.
You got a little extra cash. You know, go over to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge if you want to pledge directly to the station, or radiofreebrooklyn.com/LAR to give directly to us.
Sponsor us. Yes. You can sponsor us and be a gracious donor to our great cause.
Yeah, to our great cause. I'll tell you, I'm going to get a jacket made and it's going to have your name embroidered on it.
And if you have any material that you wish to talk about on the show, you could also reach out to us directly at lostandrewound@gmail.com. So let us begin and see what we have this time. Kauger is a stand-up comic and comedian hailing from Topeka, Kansas. She's lived in many different places and walked in many shoes before moving here to Brooklyn over 2 years ago. Since her arrival, she's gotten to work performing at Broadway Comedy Club, Village Lantern, Greenwich Village Comedy Club, and she's been on Frank Conniff's Cartoon Dump. She also produces her own monthly comedy karaoke show at Legion in Williamsburg. So joining us live in the studio to talk about this and so much more, Hannah Kauger.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, welcome.
You've been on Radio Free Brooklyn before. This is not your first rodeo.
No. I've been on the wonderful show Art Star Scene Radio. Yeah.
A few times.
A number of times, yes.
That is nice. So this is like your old stomping grounds at this point.
This is actually where I sit every time.
You know what's funny?
You got a side seat.
She's totally sitting in my seat, and I give the guests the benefit of the doubt.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You are clearly someone who puts herself out there as a comedian, a stand-up comic, if you decide to distinguish the two. Which one
people
do you...
People do. People do.
Yeah, people do. I've met a lot of people that are like, no, I'm a storyteller, or you know, some sort of performance artist. I am neither of those things. I mean, I suppose you could say that if you wanted to. I don't know why you would. I'm just a stand-up comedian.
Sure.
Yeah.
I see the same way. When people ask me, I'm like, you ever see Wizard of Oz? I'm sort of like the Scarecrow come to life. See, I would consider myself a comedian, and the reason why I call myself a comedian is because I wouldn't mind if somebody fed me a bunch of stuff to be funny, and I just delivered it.
Yeah.
I would be into that. Like, sure. That could be my life. And some people, they would freak out if they weren't in complete control of the creative process.
Well, the both of you have an interesting trajectory because, you know, having the two of you here right next to each other as people who got into stand-up comedy later in life, could maybe, Hannah, you tell me what your experience was and when you got to the city, and were you involved in stand-up comedy before you got here?
Yeah, I tell people for sure that I've been doing stand-up comedy for 2 years, but I've been flirting with it over the last four. I'd done some briefly, like just open mics randomly, like in Denver. I'd done them in Kansas City. I'd done a couple in Austin, actually making the mistake once of inviting a date to an open mic. Guess who wasn't in the seat when I got off stage?
For really, real?
For real.
Wow. Yeah,
still a friend, though, because I was like, you know what?
That's good. It's a good sport.
That's the kind of honesty that I admire. That's the kind of like rigorous honesty that only Shakira's hips can provide. And I'm into it. Yeah.
You know what's hilarious is I did that once before, too.
Oh, it's the worst.
And for me, one of the problems was that it was an open mic, like many open mics, where there were no female comics.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all men in the whole room.
Oh, yeah.
More or less every guy, their set was directed at her.
Oh,
because
God.
She was the only woman in the audience.
Oh, uncomfortable.
And they couldn't believe that she was there. It was...
A girl!
Yeah. You know, it was that sort of situation.
Oh, boy. Yeah. I have been pursuing it with, you know, more professional aspirations over the last 2 years.
Every other place that you were performed at before was sort of like, just kind of like put the feelers out?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. Like when I was on tour with a band I was performing with that I had met and befriended when I was living in Austin, Texas. And so like when I was on the road with them, I was grabbing random mics and trying to get stage time. And like that was all really interesting and kind of like building up to like, oh boy, when I get to the city, I'll get to do this whenever I want.
What kind of crowds were you performing for?
Random like open mics that I could find like on free mics in different cities. And like a couple of times my band members were like, yeah, just like warm up the crowd with stand up. I'm like, yeah, because that's what people want when they go to an electronic music concert is like stand up, clearly.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's after like the third joke, people are like, we're leaving right now.
Well, and that was, I mean, that was an interesting time too, because like that was when I was still drinking. So there was definitely like some, in the loosest sense of the word, performances I gave that I don't 100% remember. But through the magic of my friend's iPhone, I got to see myself do a blackout stand-up set. And hoo boy.
How comfortable were you watching that?
You know, it was a bit uncomfortable, actually. But I pulled it off. I got some laughs, certainly in some spots where I don't think that they were intended on my part. But, you know, chalk it up to stage time.
You know, I do think that comedy and alcoholism go hand in hand.
Oh, my God. Peanut butter and jelly.
You know, so I definitely used to drink a lot more when I was much more serious about comedy.
You know, I found that I've gotten much more serious now that I do not drink. And I'm pretty stoked on that decision.
Yeah. I don't drink anymore either, really. So at least when I go out. I did on New Year's Eve, but...
I don't drink when I go out, strictly in a dark room in my house.
Just in my closet, a bottle of red.
I drank a hot cocoa with some amaretto and Bailey's and Kahlua, and I was out like a light.
Oh, you're getting grandpa drunk. I like it.
That's how I roll, baby.
Just put it all in here and don't tell your grandmother.
So it must have taken a lot of willpower, I should say, to get yourself to be able to perform around a lot of people who probably need that liquid courage to get up there in front of complete strangers with their sets.
You know, I really couldn't even imagine going up under the influence of anything at this point. There are things that I still participate in, for sure. You know, I mean, I don't drink, but I still do lots of cocaine. I'm just kidding. That's not how
this works. A little heroin?
I couldn't even imagine going up under the influence of anything now. It would make me way too nervous. I don't think I could have gotten sober anywhere else other than New York. New York.
It's a sobering place.
Is amazing. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's just, I participate in a program for sure. And there's like one every hour here. And I tried to go to programs in the past in different states. And I think for me, it was really weird because I was always one of the younger people in the room. And so I just like couldn't relate to that. But here, there's so much young, sexy sobriety. and there's so many comedians in the room as well. So it's neat because like, I spend a majority of my life and time in New York in various basements for either my program or for performing.
Or for being on a radio show.
Or a radio show.
I know.
I
do know a decent amount of people who go to AA to help with their lives.
Is that the program
and
we're
to
talking about?
And to meet women. And to meet women at
yeah,
the same time.
Yeah, no, we would call those 13th steppers. but you know what we call what we would say in reverse is if we were cruising for dudes. At AA,
if that was a thing.
Yeah, if that was a thing, if I was in fact in AA, if the 11th tradition did not forbade me to discuss it, if I was shopping for dudes, it would be definitely the dented can aisle is what we refer to them as.
Dented can aisle?
Oh my gosh, sure.
Wow.
Incredible. Did you leave anything away from New York when you got here?
You know, like I said, I was touring with my band. At the time, well, a band that I was performing with, not my band. They're Boohoo. They're on Spotify. They're B-U-H-U. Stands for backup, hookup. relate.
Such a good name.
Right? They like swooped through and picked me up in Kansas because I pretty much had like rented a storage unit there. I left my dog with my mom for like the first 4 months that I was in New York. And so that was an absolute celebration the day that my puppy became a city pig.
Holla.
Great. Yeah.
I'm a dog owner, so I totally relate to having that animal love. That connection is incomparable.
Yeah.
There was a moment of trepidation when you were saying that sentence, and you're like, I left my dog. And I was like, go, go.
No, I'm
in
not
the gaping jaws of a volcano.
Yeah. No, I'm so happy to have my puppy pig, my familiar, with me here. She's the best.
How often do you go back to Topeka?
I actually just returned.
Nice. Oh, for the holidays, yeah.
Yeah, my sister, she lives here in Brooklyn as well. She's been here for, you know, like 11 or 12 years, I think coming up on 12. She's about 2 years older than me, not quite.
But she's been here for, like, she was here for school reasons, I guess? And
No, she moved out here right after she graduated.
Okay.
Or a couple years after she graduated, I think. I'm trying to get her timeline straight. But yeah, she's been out here. She does like a bunch of freelance stuff. She's a stylist and like a prop stylist, set designer, licensed contractor. She's a New Yorker. She does everything.
And you would come and visit her as much as possible?
I would come and visit her as much as she would allow.
Oh.
Like I said, we're a very private and personal sort of family when it comes to our own affairs. So
plus
I would,
once you get to New York, it's too cool for school time.
It's way too cool for school, and you're just so busy. You know, you're busy.
You got things to do.
Yeah, so I would come out here and visit her with my mom. She and I really didn't have much of a relationship until about 3 or 4 years ago when our father passed. That's when we got a lot closer. And now I have this wonderful relationship with her. I hope you're listening. I love you. please come to karaoke next Tuesday.
Yeah.
So like we have these weird little meetups like where we'll go and do karaoke. She does a monthly where she plays old country music and like really bad 90s country music. Have you ever been to Molasses Books? It's just down the way.
That's a very familiar.
DeKalb Hart.
Yeah.
So they do this thing once a month. She and her friend Allie called Baby's First Rodeo. where it's on Facebook, look it up. They play like really old country. And then, of course, just our country's checkbook is balanced. Everyone has a cowboy starter jacket, early 90s country. It's wonderful. So we just sit there and remember our childhood together and completely isolate everyone else who came to see her because they're like, what are you guys talking about? We're like, Kansas, don't worry about it.
Was it just the two of you or did you have a pretty big family?
We have two brothers, one of which is deceased. He was our older brother, Lee. And then we have a little brother, Joseph, who lives in Montana, and I believe he is like 24.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ya.
Yeah. I mean, there was four of us growing up. We mostly lived with my mother. She raised my sister and I, and then we had sporadic custody with our dad. But we certainly had a relationship with my dad and my brothers growing up.
Between your sister, who eventually got into designing, and then you eventually getting into comedy and performance, was your upbringing rooted in the performing arts?
Yeah, I come from a fairly liberal family. We are Catholic, but our unofficial religion is the Democratic Party.
In Kansas, that must have been like, you know,
yeah,
something
else. A shorter list is what's right with my state. I remember my Nana telling me I needed to break up with a boy once because he didn't vote.
What?
Yeah. We're also a matriarchy. Around third grade is when I got the bug. My Nana, I think she noticed that I was a little rambunctious, but like I wasn't a problem child or anything. I just had a lot of feelings. And she decided that they would be best channeled into the theater. And so I went to Helen Hawker, which is a theater that we have in the park in Topeka, Kansas, where I am from, the capital. and there was an audition for this production called We Pals.
What?
Yeah, We Pals was based off of a comic strip from the 1960s.
Is it like We Pals? Ah, We Pals, man. We Pals.
Well, it was a musical. And
you had to audition for it in third grade?
Yeah. And amazing. It was really weird because, like, my Nana, I remember her, like, kind of, like, elbowing me the whole time and just, like, grinning. I was, like, looking around, like, wide-eyed at the room at my first encounter with a wild stage mother. Oh, my gosh. Like, thank you for not, like, preening me or snapping at me to get my chassés and pas de bourrées, like, correct. Like, I don't even know what this was. I still can't dance. And, yeah, it just was really interesting to see the dynamic of an actual stage mother and child relationship. And I just was there with my Nana, who was like, you're great. Don't worry about it. You got this.
Exactly. Imagine the intensity of which guys that you could date because of political affiliation. Versus...
You know, I mean, I don't know that she was so serious so much as she just wanted to let me know that she certainly had an opinion about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm saying is that at least that it didn't translate into that kind of intensity with
the theater.
Yes, exactly.
No.
You can't do this show.
The first role that I ended up getting was in third grade at Helen Hawker for this production called We Pals. And the role was wonderful. I don't think I even understood what it was at the time. I just liked that I got to yell at boys. The role as it is written, because I looked at the playbook when I was visiting home recently, was the role of Connie, a young suffragette, a feminist. Oh, cool. I just get to hate boys.
Good first role.
Wonderful.
I wrote a paper on women's suffrage in school, and I think I had to explain to the class 20 times that it wasn't, like, women's suffrage wasn't just, like, the history of women. They're like, yeah, they've been suffraging forever. Yeah. It's like, I was like, no. English has many meanings. There's lots of words, you know.
Homophones.
Exactly.
When you arrived to high school, you were definitely involved in all sorts of things, more than just theater, right?
Well, I was in forensics, which is like doing theater in a box. And maybe you're not quite smart enough for debate. I don't know. Sorry, anybody who's like NFL proud. So I did that, and I was still very much into theater. Theater was my life, okay?
Wait, explain. How are you involved in forensics?
No, not like CSI. Like forensics and debate. Like where you do like humorous interp or like, you know, persuasive speech and stuff like that.
You go like model Congress?
Yeah, I did model UN in middle school, but I did not in high school.
You know what I learned in model UN? That... UN has no power.
I learned that I could just write a really ridiculous story about Tajikistan and try and bribe other countries with opium fields.
Yeah, that's what, like all I did was try to subvert the UN, and it was like success. Like my best friend was North Korea, and I was Indonesia, and I was like, let's just do this. I was like, I got this giant population, let's just roll with it.
I just knew that I would try and pass notes to the cutiest cuties in there, so I'd be like, what up, Chad? What up, Congo? Tajikistan here. What's going on?
So that was your way of getting involved in a less theatrical, but certainly a more proactive way.
Sure. I mean, like, when I got to high school, I was certainly, like, wanting to join all of the clubs.
You wanted to be involved?
Yeah. I was in GSA, which is the Gay Straight Alliance, and that was a funny conversation to have with my mom. I was like, I'm not coming out. I'm just telling you I'm in a club.
It's actually a really good way to put it.
Yeah. And she's just like, well, so, like, S for straight, right? And I was like, well, which being in GSA in Topeka, Kansas, was interesting because we are the home of the Westboro Baptist Church. I actually grew up not very far from their compound. And if you're unfamiliar with what the Westboro Baptist Church is and who Fred Phelps is or Steve Drain, oh boy, I just don't know what to tell you other than, like,
I mean,
we always grew up saying don't give them any attention. That's what they want.
They're trolls in human form.
They are. They're human trolls. They're the terrible people that hold those awful signs about how God hates homosexuals. Mm-hmm. So that was weird. They would come and picket any like GSA event that our high school or any other high school had. At the time, though, I don't even think most of the high schools even had a P flag. When I joined GSA, I think it was probably 2003. My friend Samantha Snyder got me into it, and my friend Corey. They were both in Unity Justice Coalition and just wonderful protest gals. And I was like, wow, that's exciting. I want to be friends with you and meet other people just like you. So it would have been early 2000s when we were in it. Even when we would put on a play at our school, I can't speak on behalf of other school fax machines, but we would get dirty, mean faxes from the Phelpses for sure.
That's really crazy.
One of them I was referred to as a whore of Babylon.
No!
I would love to use that as a credit if you want to add that later.
Can you be like, well, if this was the future, would I be a whore of Babylon 5?
Yeah, God, I wish. Oh, my God. Have you seen Farscape? We'll talk about it later.
Farscape, yeah, my mother absolutely loves that show.
Your mom and I would be friends. Yeah. I also was in another club called Goat Club.
What was that?
Goat Club was through the... I'm going to say it wrong.
It's not 4-H.
No, it's not 4-H, but like I grew up with horses and stuff.
All right.
I'm from the prairie. Uh-huh. You know, as is mandated by state law, every girl at 8 years old receives her first horse, and you could actually be issued a ticket for wearing shoes.
What?
That's not true. I'm just going to fill everybody.
No, but I wish that was true.
Our state capitol building is an Applebee's.
Yeah. So when you're a child, you're strictly a bumpkin.
Yeah, totally.
And the speed limit in her town was moseying.
Yeah, it was moseying. Actually, if you ever are so lucky as to drive on our highways out there, the speed limit is very much suggested. So have fun with that. So Goat Club. It was through the Heifer Foundation. I think Heifer. Anyway, I'm pretty sure that we found out about it through Oprah.
Oprah.
She's the best. And what it was like there's like a whole catalog of different livestock that you could choose from. So we could have been Water Buffalo Club or Chicken Club, but we chose Goat. Because it was very metal. Goats were socialists. There was no president of the goat club. There was dominant goat. And I was dominant goat. I would start every meeting on top of a chair. And if someone could knock me over, well, then they were dominant goat. But what we would do is we would...
Nature's president, right?
You know, right? We would... Goats are the only animal with orbital pupils and backwards arching horns. And we would raise money to send a pregnant goat to a developing country, along with agricultural information on how you could use this goat for, you know, its fur, like for pashmina maybe, or you could use it for yogurt or cheese or milk or soaps or lotions. And then, you know, a certain X amount of time before it gives birth to its kids. And then once one of those kids is pregnant and reproducing, then you can slaughter said initial goat for meat.
So when you said Goat Club, you weren't lying.
I wasn't lying.
That wasn't no acronym. That was some straight goats.
That was some straight goats, baby.
Wait, so where would they take the pregnant goats to normally?
The halal guy.
Yeah. Actually,
not
just
cool, dude. I've seen them before.
You know, it just really depended on like whomever needed it most, I guess. Like we would just send money to this foundation and then they'd send a goat somewhere. And
that's fascinating. Yeah. I don't think I've ever heard anything like that.
I'm pretty sure it's still in existence. So, you know,
I believe you.
If you want to sponsor an animal being sent to be ethically slaughtered and used in a country, go for it.
I feel like I want to join Water Buffalo Club.
Oh, yeah. It sounds very prestigious. Like perhaps you're a mason, but you're not. You're actually just sending water.
Well, what would you get? Where would you send a water buffalo?
To whatever nations have them.
To New York, Buffalo, New York.
And be like, just in case it rains.
Yeah. All terrain buffalo, just for you.
If I was an animal and I knew I was delicious, I'd be really worried all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, humans are pretty delicious, but...
Welcome to what it feels like to be a woman, Jimmy.
Oh, man! People are licking their lips daily.
I'm sorry. I just compared women to animals, and I'm sure I will have to face the tribunal for that.
It's true. I did write a joke that I've never done, because I don't know if it would ever work, but it was basically likening men as hunters, searching for women, and then trying to determine whether or not they were, like, plump enough from the winter to like hunt by looking at their upper arm.
That's who was it? Wasn't it Ray Charles used to touch women's wrists to see what their body type was like? He would always shake by the wrist.
I feel like that could teach you.
Yeah.
Because honestly, even with a thin-wristed woman that was bigger, like there's going to be some sort of density.
Sure.
Wrist density.
I don't know how comfortable I am with this conversation.
We apologize to all out there.
Roll it back a little bit.
With bad wrist density.
You would consider yourself a feminist?
Sure, absolutely. I don't think it's a dirty word.
And when did you get into feminism? Was it around this time when you were getting involved in all the clubs? Obviously, the gay and straight alliance that was standing.
I don't necessarily know that I even knew what that word was, even though I was heavily into Riot Girl music and these clubs, until I made it to my mid-20s, and you know, with the rise of social media and just buzzwords in general, what does this mean? I was like, sure, I think everybody should probably be this. And then, you know, you start learning about intersectionality and all of these different things about feminism that you hadn't considered because you might come from a place of privilege. Hey. even knowing what I know now, I absolutely am a feminist.
When you were doing the show that we're about to talk about, that character that you played is a very stereotypical caricature of a damsel, female damsel.
Totally. And those are the kind of roles that I would always get cast as. I would
either
be.
Why do you think that?
You know, I don't know. I was never an ingenue. I will tell you that. I have a face that does not say ingenue and definitely an attitude. But I would either get cast as like straight up evil or kind of like a ditzy fast gal.
I want to, because I know that I'm, what am I again? Am I slick and what is
fast
it?
Fast and slick.
I'm fast and slick, apparently. My friend told me that when I was 6 years old. But nice. Say that again, fast and...
Like a ditzy sort of bubbly, fast. A ditzy bubbly sort of like fast gal.
Fast.
So when you say ditzy. Fast, you mean...
Oh, I'm sorry. Fast. I'm speaking in like Nana speak. Perhaps she's like a little bit more sexual.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was inferring.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
In high school, when you were cast as these characters, was this something that you were comfortable with and others weren't? Or did you find it more of a challenge to get to that level?
No, I think I loved it because it enabled me to kind of escape to a super duper duper. Super magnified version of myself, like a hyper self sort of thing. These women that I embodied on stage, I got to be braver. I got to be louder. I got to be riskier. I got to be flirtier than I would definitely be in my regular life.
You know what's interesting? I just rewatched the other day, which I hadn't seen in so long, Annie Hall.
Okay.
And just like they had the little blurb to explain what it was, and they just said, you know, neurotic New York comedian played by Woody Allen dates ditzy Diane Keaton.
Mm-hmm.
And
you never really thought of her as ditzy, did
never.
You?
I never no. when I watched it. And then, but constantly in the film,
Woody Allen, not a feminist.
Exactly. Constantly in the film, she's doubting her own intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she's like, oh, I'm so dumb. Like, why do you think I'm so dumb? And it's because Woody Allen wrote them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in some of the characters that I played, like, especially with Audrey.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yes. As spoiler, we're going to explore that. with Audrey, I liked her character a lot because I felt like from beginning to end, she starts to, like, self-actualize and realize that she is a powerful person
sure.
of worth and... Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could say that it's a little trite because it's like, oh, it took a man to help her realize this. But by the end of it, like, she's powerful, you know? I mean, and like, I remember realizing, because of course I was like heavily immersed in, like, theater was my life, okay? Like, watching musicals over and over again and getting pretty early on that a musical like Grease, I was like, this is some BS. Like, I don't like the message of this at all, that like, you have to change for a man. But with Audrey, I liked it because it was... Somebody saying, I'm a person that everyone has said is not okay. You're a person that doesn't feel like she's okay. Like, it's just like two broken people building each other up, which I'm sure is not necessarily the healthiest message either. Like, hey, you're an incomplete person. You just need another incomplete person to be a whole. That's not true. I don't know. I thought it was sweet.
Well, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's dive into the world of Little Shop of Horrors in 2004 with Hannah Kauger.
Oh boy.
Lost and Rewound. Radio Free Brooklyn. To that quick little segue, that Little Shop of Horrors was the production in Topeka, Kansas at Hannah Kauger's high school. We are joined by Hannah Kauger live in the studio to talk about her role of Audrey in this production. This is a production that occurred in your...
High school.
Well, what year?
Junior year.
Okay. So you were not 17, but almost 17.
I was on the edge of 17.
You were on...
I would have been graduated in 2006.
Just same like... year as me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys are...
You trying to say just like the White Winged Dove?
Suddenly Jimmy is standing beside you.
No. Feed me, Elon. Feed me.
Sorry. Yeah. No, you totally caught my joke before.
I liked it.
Yeah, I dig some Fleetwood Mac. What kind of music were you listening to in junior year?
My entire personality was based off of my music tastes and my leather jacket and whatever I had painted on it or pinned on it. It was super important for me to let everybody know how punk rock I was. Mm-hmm. I was listening to mostly like The Addicts and like Sham 69 and like Violators and a lot of things that people would be like, what is that? What are you talking about? Nobody's listening to that.
I definitely never got extensive punk rock catalogs. But there's a song by the Subhumans that I absolutely love.
Like I would love to go back in time or to the alternate dimension where there was a punk version of you, Alon. The same way, like looking over at you and just with a spiked mohawk, like, yeah, let's do this. Like, it just doesn't. Yeah.
You know, I actually, there's a guy named Noah Lyon. Shout out to Noah Lyon, who lives in Brooklyn now.
Hey, and
I was in seventh grade when he was in 11th grade. And I remember he was the resident punk rocker.
Oh, yeah.
You always, in your school, remember that kid that you looked up to in some regard as the consummate stereotype. You don't know who he is personally, but you see him. He's like his aura, his passing by. He's got the leather jacket. He's got the chutzpah to go into the school every day and make a fashion statement. It's amazing to watch that kind of personality on display. How did that fare in your school?
Well, at that time in my school, there were probably like three of us that were punk rock to like the fullest extent. So there...
You weren't alone.
No, I wasn't.
They were there with you.
Yeah. Well, it was funny because like we all didn't necessarily like each other or connect immediately because I mean, at that point in our adolescence, you know, and especially in the Midwest, something as sacred as discovering alternative music. And of course, the absolute, I don't know, I don't want to say indignance of youth, but like, I think we all pretty much were like, okay, this is mine. I found it. You can't have it. Like, it's a club. It's for me. And it also was frustrating because like between myself, Tasha Ransom, and Drew Perry, we all had blonde mohawks at the same time. And so people either assumed we were each other or siblings or dating. And like when we all finally did break and become friends, we decided to keep up all three of those rumors at once. So people were like, oh my God, like, I think they're related and dating. It's very scary.
it was well assumed that I was a drug addict because I had long hair.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it wasn't, and I was like the only Hispanic kid that had long hair where it wasn't braided.
Oh.
They couldn't believe I didn't have cornrows and like.
You guys aren't here now, but he does have cornrows right now.
Right now.
Yeah, boy.
I was always assumed that I was weak because I was short and very thin, which is true. I was not the most intimidating, and in fact, the opposite of intimidating when I was younger. So everybody was using me as a pushover a lot of the time.
Totally.
Sometimes I deserved it, but other times was unwarranted.
I just wanted to be way badder than I was. I remember being so cavalier and like, I don't need to audition for this musical. I don't even want to. This is so dumb. And then like in my head, I'm like, yes. Okay, we're going to get this role. Like this would be so cool if we got this role. Oh my gosh, it would be so exciting. Yeah, I don't really care about musicals. And then like when I got the role, just like, silently like screaming and jumping up and down to myself and then like not telling anybody because I was like, this is not cool.
This is a dream role that you had.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. This was like one of my favorite musicals. Ellen Green is so good.
Amazing.
Yeah. And like that's who I would watch and just practice and emulate. And then like when we did the audition, I felt fairly confident, but also sort of like, well, this will never work. Well, what would they do with my mohawk?
Did you end up doing any other school plays besides this one?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely.
But after this, this one, but
no, after this one, no. Nah, dog.
This was the last one that
y'all
you did.
Y'all dropped out.
I did notice earlier when she was like, yeah, I would have graduated.
Yeah, I would have.
Like, around this year, but who really knows?
But I couldn't have graduated from Punk Rock Academy if I hadn't exactly. dropped out of Topeka High,
the
guys.
School of rock.
Come on.
The school
yeah.
of rock.
That's really interesting that this was your swan song.
It was. Yeah, you guys, I peaked. I peaked in high school.
Well,
no, pretty rough.
It was a swan song from the very impressionable and very inspired and very involved Hannah Kauger that was, you know, clearly the product of some kind of very politically left-leaning and very progressive, creative lifestyle.
Well, it was weird because after this production and after I dropped out, it was so, again, so important to me to just, like, be bad and, like, show everybody how punk I was. I'm sure that there were several activating events for that, but that's neither here nor there. So, like, I went traveling and, like, you know, joined bands and stuff like that and definitely didn't even do theater again in any sense of the word until I was 23 years old. And that's when I got back into theater. The remaining group of old friends that I had and the new group of friends that I had made were all just like, whoa, this is not something that we knew you were even interested in, let alone very good at, which that's what they said. I didn't say that, but I am very good.
I'm just going to bat myself.
Please book me. Oh, God. Yeah. So it was interesting to return to that because, like, I remember in this journey to be so punk rock and impress haircuts and or boys and girls, I really kind of dumbed myself down because I didn't think that being involved in theater or in performance at all was cool or, like, you know, interesting enough to, like, talk about than, oh, you, that's a really cool, you know, back patch that you have.
Well, I can tell you that.
But it was way cooler than any of that.
When I went to college, the school that I went to, I went for film. And yes. I did stage plays the same in high school, and then I was sort of afraid of putting all my eggs in this, like, performance basket, and I was like, I want to get these other skills that are more practical, which down the line I was like, oh, I don't want to do that anyway. But that's how college goes.
That's how it goes, man.
But we had musical theater in my school, and I remember the same way, really being put off by it by the kids that were doing musical theater because they would be these guys and these girls that would be, like, singing down the hallway.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't like that.
Singing, like, you know, Aladdin.
Divas.
You're right. But the amount of times that I'd hear, like, a whole new world, yeah, like, coming from the bathroom, I'm just like, is this the
I never associated with that either, and I was doing play after play after play after play for
those
over 10 years.
Those kids were too pure for me, man. Like, I remember, like, when I got the role for this particular musical that we're discussing, so many professional choir girls in high school being like, she does not deserve this role. She is too bad. Does she even go to class? It was weird because it was like, I don't necessarily fit in with any of those kids. Oh my God, you know, I was, you know, abusing Adderall and smoking weed and drinking.
Time out. You were smoking and drinking. You were also abusing Adderall.
Are you kidding
in
me?
Junior year of high school?
Do you have any idea how many AP classes I was taking? Come on.
As an ADD kid, I have no ability to disassociate myself with Adderall at all because I definitely was.
Well, yeah, you need it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does not do the same thing for me or people who don't have ADD that it does for you. Like, it just pretty much, like, sped me up and I was able to, like, go to rehearsals and, like, study for anatomy and physiology and, you know, all of the classes that I had that I was deciding to go to at the time. I was doing that and, like, smoking and drinking and, you know, the kids who were singing A Whole New World.
Yeah,
and
you didn't,
like,
fit into the clique.
No, they didn't like me. They were just like, ew, she's a cat with mange. Don't pet her. It's gross.
Does this mean you did not really get along with most of your cast?
You know, I hadn't been given, like, a formal diagnosis or, like, the correct meds at all at that time. I am bipolar type 2, and I think taking Adderall recreationally on top of that definitely aggravated super aggro Hannah. I was cranky because I wasn't sleeping or eating, just kind of antisocial in general, but I'm sure everybody just assumed that, oh, well, she's just punk rock. That's what they do. It was just really uncomfortable most of the time, and even if those kids did like me or, like, make an attempt to be friendly or kind to me, it didn't translate to me as such. I always figured I was, like, a joke to them or something. The boy that played my Seymour, though, I'd been friends with him since we were probably, like, 10 doing theater. I liked him, and I also liked that he drank and smoked and all of that. Like, we got along just fine.
But you know what it is? That is just the beginning. It's the classic beginnings of haters. It's just haters being haters in school before they, like, know what it's all about to be haters.
You know, I think I was my biggest hater, though, in their defense. So.
Yeah, but, I mean, at the same time, I had something that was sort of similar. In my high school, we had, you know, the school plays every year. The first one that I tried out for, I never thought I could do it. I never was interested in that sort of thing until my junior year. There was a girl that I dated at the time, and she just transferred to the school. She'd done all the school plays in her old school, mm-hmm. So she had a lot of theater background. And we both went out for the same play. You know, she convinced me that I could act and that I should try it, and I said, sure. And then I guess I got a much bigger role than she did, mm-hmm. And she was furious with me. And the entire time we did the play, she would never stop, like, giving me shit about it.
Aww.
And it got so bad that the director came and pulled me aside and goes, you need to break up with her.
Oh, no.
And he was like, I've never once said anything in all my years of teaching to a student that it was about their personal life. But this chick is, like, every performance, she'd be, like, guilting me before we would start and stuff like
dangerous
that.
Dangerous showmance.
You know, exactly. showmance.
Exactly, this has come up a lot of times, and I gotta say, Jimmy, give you credit because you didn't do many musicals in high school, but every time you talk about it, there's always a new story about
drama.
It.
Yeah, it was this show was particularly exciting for me because it culminated this long-standing crush, this unrequited crush that I had on Robbie Fowler, who played my Seymour, and again, we had been doing theater since we were 10, and there was always the whisper of, like, is he, isn't he? And then, like, he didn't even know at the time. And then I remember, like, a really embarrassing moment in my 7th grade year when we did Guys and Dolls together, and he was my Nathan, and I was his Adelaide, and I was like,
what?
I know that, like, things are different and, like, confusing for all of us right now, but, like, if you ever need to practice kissing, like, I'm around. Robbie is awesome. I love him. He lives in New York right now with his fiance.
Nice.
And he is gay. Well, that's awesome.
Let us talk about...
I got to kiss him in the show and it was amazing.
Stage kisses are weird though, aren't they?
It wasn't a stage kiss. I think he knew. He was like, Hannah wants a kiss.
This is actually a perfect point you make because like we did with Sam Z on the show some time back, he provided us with a video. You provided us with a video. So unfortunately, because we are digitizing the audio from said video, of which is totally permissible for this program, because we're going to be listening to a few of your songs,
oh,
and
God,
it's not necessary to be having all the visuals. I have to point out, I'll wait until we do Suddenly Seymour, which is not coming up just yet. In the meantime, let's take a listen to Somewhere That's Green.
Popsicles. I have not heard this in 13 years. I'm so excited.
Take a listen.
Let's do it.
Exclusive.
Oh, my God.
Green.
You and I are just friends. I can never be this girl. I got a past. Oh, I don't deserve a sweet, considerate, suddenly successful guy like Seymour.
Mm-hmm. This child comes from no family.
Thank you.
gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
See, do you still do any singing then?
Yeah, I sing.
Karaoke?
Yeah, I do karaoke.
Well, but you're not piping it the same way.
Listen, I produce this monthly show, if for nothing else, as an excuse for me to get in costume and open the show and tell my performers, this is what we expect.
Apologies to the listener for any of the crickling and crackling. The VCR that I bought last night at about 12:30 from Craigslist.
Thank you.
We'll get back to you in one second, Hannah, but I just have to get this off my chest.
This needs to be told.
Last night, I'm digitizing this, and no lie, the VCR completely craps out, and I'm saying to myself, I need to do this. This has to be done. So I go on Craigslist, because that's the only place you can go to purchase a VCR anymore. 12:30 in the morning, I took a lift and got myself to the location and back. I went to Bed-Stuy. Shout out to the guy who was up at that time of night in Ocean Hill on like Saratoga Avenue, way the hell out there. I bought his VCR, working Panasonic VCR, for $10.
Yes.
I gave him $9 four quarters, and I got back on my lift and went home and began working.
Unreal, bro.
And, I mean, I can't recognize you because it's very difficult with the wig, and you're in high school, and I'm just getting to know you for the first time over these last few months, Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was gorgeous. That was just simply gorgeous. Like, the entire presentation, you just knocked it out the park with
this. I was impressed.
Thank you very much.
But I can see how the same way you're like, yeah, so I got to make some sort of excuse. I got to be able to sing in some sort of forum. People need to hear me and notice.
Yeah.
It's the way to be.
With all the haters, more or less, that you had indicated before, it must have been quite a hush, hush, hush kind of the haters.
A hush falls over the crowd, exactly.
No, because you put everybody in their place.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at first they could be like, she doesn't even know how to. Nope.
Well, I got him. I hope you, this is like so full of myself, but like, I hope you do post the picture of me of what I looked like underneath of that wig at the time in conjunction with this episode, because that was what I think everybody was just so like, ugh, about. But I love musical theater, and I'm so bummed that I hid that part of me for so long. And my resolution this year is to definitely quit smoking so I can get back to that pretty voice. I still have a lot of the same notes, but my higher register has suffered greatly. So don't smoke.
Yeah.
Yeah, unless you want to sound like this, kids.
Yeah. Now I'm just going to moonlight for like Edna Turnblatt.
Exactly. You know.
Let's keep it going. We're already on this track. In this rhythm.
Also, thank you. I have not heard that in 13 years. And like, I just so desperately wish I could go give little Hannah a hug, because that was nice.
Memories.
I believe Ellen Green actually did that role as well.
Suddenly Seymour is a song that I hear all the time because of karaoke, speaking of which. And I must admit that it is become so ingrained in my head that I never think of any other song other than that, when it comes to Little Shop of Horrors. And I'm familiar with the show, I'm familiar with the movie, and you know that song will be heard before, and Skid Row, etc. But this song is just so iconic that it's so difficult to get anything out of the show other than this. It's such a brilliantly written song.
Yeah.
And you said that you had such a good chemistry with your co-star.
Yeah. Robbie,
and
I love you still. If you ever need to practice kissing.
If he ever hears the show, this will be the first time that he's heard this just as well.
I'm going to send this to him immediately, yeah.
All right. Well, Robbie, this one goes out to you, and we'll talk a little bit about what happens after this song once it's done.
Maybe I just been a little under the weather
resolving.
Oh, gosh. It's Orin, isn't it? You've been in the dumps. Disappearance. You miss him, don't you?
Miss him? Oh, I never felt so relieved as when they told me he'd gone. Oh, it was like a miracle. Well, not to mention all the money I paid on Epsom salts and bandages.
Then what's the matter?
Well, I guess I just feel guilty is all. I mean, what if he met with foul play or some terrible accident of some kind? It's hard to feel responsible, you know, because, well, secretly, I wished it. Oh,
Audrey, you shouldn't waste one more minute talking about that creep. There's a lot of guys, nice guys.
A girl I respected and still do. Lift up your head, wash off your mascara. Here, take my Kleenex, wipe that lipstick away. Show me your face, clean as the morning. The old things were bad, but now they're okay.
Just like that.
Boom goes the dynamite.
Yeah. Again, sorry for the crickling and the crackling, but hey.
Hey, these are old tapes, bro.
These are old tapes.
This is what the past sounds
12
like.
12 years ago, you were in this production of Little Shop of Horrors, and you said while we were listening to it that your cousin was playing the dentist?
Yeah. I mean, he's technically like a second cousin or whatever, but it
counts. It counts.
It counts, yeah. I don't know why I just tried to dismiss that like a Kansan.
Yeah, he's like, yeah,
cool. He's my brunkle daddy. Brandon Durkee, whose mom actually believe probably recorded this. He played Oren Scrivello, the dentist. And I remember when I saw that he was cast, I was like, oh, that's so perfect. Except now I have to kiss my cousin.
You had to kiss Robbie at the very end of this amazing rendition of Suddenly Seymour. And I don't think I've ever seen a more passionate kiss from a high school production, which is, unfortunately, we can't see it, but it is raw and real.
Wow,
yeah, Robbie went for it, and I'm sure I'm blushing right now. Robbie went for it, and he went for it every night, and it made me so happy and so sad, because I was like, oh, no, but I love you.
And you did how many productions, performances of this?
We did two official ones, but we did like a teaser, which was the whole show for like an eighth grade class, where Robbie was like, dude, you totally just awakened so many eighth graders. I was like, oh, gross. probably true, though. And then we did a teaser for the high school itself. So four in all.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting that you only did four, but at the same time, you made all of those four count. Clearly. Fantastic rendition of a song that is iconic. And what's even better is that you have this amazing memory that you can come back to it. When you go back to Kansas to see your family for the holidays, you go and you take this tape back with you and you get to hear it for the very first time.
Oh, it's wonderful. Thank you.
We strive to do this. We strive to unearth all these artifacts and bring it back full circle. How you are now really was shaped very heavily by the performances that you did. Tell us exactly what you have coming up then. What is Hannah Kauger doing now these days? You said you have a show at Legion, this Rock and Roast.
Yeah, the show that I produce. It is my baby. My co-producer is Rosa Escondon. We do that show monthly. We've just rehomed it from its original location to now Legion Bar in Williamsburg. It's going to be the 27th. We're still in talks about the time.
Okay.
But I would imagine it'll probably be around 8 p.m. Just stay tuned. You can follow me at Hannah Biotics with a Z, because I'm an idiot, on Twitter to get updates there, or Cowgirl Hannah on Instagram.
You've got so many shows that you do. I mean, you're constantly out there performing and... You're a working gal. But...
The next straight stand-up performance that I have coming up is going to be at Bunga's Den on the 5th, Laugh in a Draft with Jared Wilder. And the rest of the lineup is really fantastic. I would recommend checking that out. I believe that's going to be at 8 p.m. at Bunga's Den on January the 5th. Following that, I'm doing a Prescription of Laughter at Triple Crown. That'll be at 7 p.m. in Manhattan. Another stellar lineup. A show that I'm very much looking forward to is going to be called Pacific Standard Time. It's produced by Nasser Khan and another gentleman whom I am not going to remember right now. So
but
I apologize.
Nasser Khan's good. Folk.
Nasser's amazing. So that'll be 15 sexy minutes from me at Standard Time. And that's at 8 p.m. on January the 12th. And then I have a show at Bodega Bar in Williamsburg. It's for women's rights, kind of a my body, my choice sort of show. But I promise you.
The jokes will be topical.
Yeah. They will be topical. But I promise you mine are not that scary and involve very little to do with my body or me being a woman. I'm in the Britney paradox of not a girl, not yet a woman. If there was a box for Muppet, that's what I would check.
Good thing you're not at the Britney bald stage.
I've been there, baby. But that one's going to be at 8 p.m. at Bodega Bar on the 15th. And then, of course, rounding out the month is Rock and Roast.
The very busy Hannah Kauger here on Lost and Rewound.
Thank you so much for coming out.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again to all of our listeners. Let us know your thoughts or to contribute your own artifacts from the yesteryears.
Lost and Rewound.
Subscribe, and donate.
At gmail.com. Exactly.
gmail.com. Lost and Rewound.
Boom, 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 boom. Thanks for listening. We'll be back here on Radio Free Brooklyn Thursday, 3 p.m. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.